pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon. 6 minutes after the hour, got a jam-packed show planned for you today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour from the Heritage Foundation, Hanuman Spakowski. We're going to talk about, well, you remember Donald Trump's tweet about delaying the election? Do you remember that? And, well, it seems it's far-fetched and probably not very likely to happen. But the alternative is mail-in ballots. How would that work? And, you know, how might you guard the election from any sort of fraud or anything like that? And these are questions you need to ask. How could you execute it? Mail-in balloting. We do a little bit of it with absentee voting, but the way a lot of people on the left want to do it, they want to take the voter rolls and just mail out ballots to everybody. What could go wrong, right? We'll get into that at the bottom of the hour. Also got State Senator David Sessions coming up in the 10 o'clock hour and in 11 o'clock hour from Yellowhammer News. My good friend, Sean Ross. So please, please, if you would, stay tuned for that. A couple of things in the news. Tommy Tuberville just getting beat up today. But he's not the only one that thinks this. $600 unemployment supplement, or whatever you want to call it, surplus. Is that too much? Is it disincentivizing people from going to work? $600 is a decent sum of money, but could you live off of $600 for how long? Back when I was in college, that would have lasted me for a couple of semesters, perhaps. You'd be amazed what you could do with a buck when you're in your early 20s. But in 2020. As I have matured and discovered the finer things in life, not very long. So, but for a lot of people, $600 is very useful. It's a car payment, or maybe it's a rent payment, or part of a rent payment. School clothes, whatever. But is that much money really keeping people from going to work? Is that keeping you from looking for a job? I got the $600 coming. I'm going to sit at home. On the other hand, is it that big of a help? Given everything that's going on and everybody out of work, it just seems if you're out of work and you don't have a place to go, $600, it helps, but I'm still probably going to need to find a job. On the other hand, if it doesn't, if I don't need it, it seems like such a weird sum of money to argue about, but nonetheless, there's some political implications to it. So Tuberville says, yeah, and he's not the only one that says this. There's a lot of people on Capitol Hill that say this. Adding that $600, it does stuff to the labor pool. People won't look for jobs. We gotta figure out a way to get people back to work that can, to have the ability to go back to work. That's the problem with these one-size-fits-all approaches. Everybody's circumstances are different. And you can't apply just one thing that's going to make everybody's lives better. But it's hard to do that. Government can't think that way. They can't think nuanced. That's why we're conservatives. We realize government approaches aren't practical. At least that's why I'm a conservative. Maybe just a cool team to be on for some people, but for me, you apply it to your everyday life. But the $600 thing, it's come up, and Democrats in Alabama are using it to hammer Tommy Tuberville. I don't know, but the people that who is that appealing to? Because there's some people that probably agree with him, and if anything, they're a little skeptical of this coach wanting to be a U.S. senator, and they hear him talking like that, they're like, well, it makes sense to me. It all depends on your worldview. But this is the big obstacle, the big hurdle. One of the big hurdles, I should say. There's multiple hurdles, but this is probably the more realistic hurdle that is keeping any sort of COVID-19 rescue package from becoming reality. So that's a that's the hot button topic for those of you that really follow Capitol Hill close. They're still trying to hammer that out. It's fascinating to watch Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi say one thing, and then you kind of wonder, like, what are they really? What is their end desire here? Well, I can tell you what that is. It's to get Donald Trump out of office and Joe Biden elected. That's the way you've got to look at this. They're not wanting to make your life better or anybody having a hard time. They have a grander plans beyond 2021, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, to be cynical, it's just a reality. It's wrong. We can debate the merits of it. But everything through the lens right now that goes on in Washington, D.C. pertains to the 2020 election and control of Congress. And Democrats think they have a winning hand by saying, those greedy Republicans don't want you to have your $600. And Republicans think they got a winning hand by saying, well, Democrats don't want people to go to work. They don't want to get the economy back going. Who does that appeal to? And who ultimately wins it? And maybe this might be, you know, bubble Jeff Poor here, or Breitbart Boy on radio, but my instinct tells me most people are like, you probably ought to get a job and take care of yourself and not expect government to just pay your way. But it's as simple as that. But everything's got to be viewed through this lens of what benefits Republicans and what benefits Democrats. And both sides think they have a winning hand. We'll see who will prevail. But if nothing happens between now and November 3rd, how's the public react to that? How many of you out there are really pining for the government to do more on coronavirus and some form of stimulus? How many of you really, really are seeking that out? So that's the question. Speaking of presidential election, Jill Biden yesterday did an interview with Fox News right after this show was on. And let's talk about that, the debates. There's a fear out there for some Democrats, and I think justly so, seeing Joe Biden and Donald Trump next to each other on a stage, and that Joe Biden won't perform. Did he perform all that well in the primary debates? Not particularly, but it wasn't a disaster. We see Joe Biden on a stage before, and we've seen him in tough situations. We see him up there with, a dozen people? They were just gunning for him on that stage. I think maybe they're downplaying the prospects. Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and he's going to make it tough. But we tend to think Joe Biden can't handle Donald Trump on the debate stage, and there may be some difficulties there for him. But anyway, Joe Biden says he's going to do it. Three debates, he'll be there. Don't worry about it. So maybe can we just stop with all of these media op-eds and all these people that think they're smarter than everybody saying Joe Biden shouldn't debate Trump? My suspicion is it has nothing to do with Joe Biden's performance. There's a fear in the media. They don't like that one-on-one, unfiltered Donald Trump before the American public because they can't fact-check him. They can't tell you where he's wrong. He just gets up there and gets to say stuff. That's not right. We can't have the president doing that. That's my suspicion. They can do all the fact-checking afterwards, but how many people are going to stick around to see what Wolf Blitzer has to say about the debates? So that's the question. What will these debates look like? Let's just say this. Let's look back at Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump and those debates. I would say they were a net positive for Donald Trump. You'd be in jail. Remember that line? That's the one we're always going to remember. Trump, whether he's right on policy and he plays a little fast and loose with the facts and stuff, he's very good on TV. He understands the broad appeal of television. The Apprentice was successful. He understands this mass marketing appeal and what people really like. He can spot that. His instincts are right on that. It may not be, completely dull, boring policy. But I was talking about this in the last hour with Sean Sullivan about how, you know, we have such a a society that's interested in the aesthetics. They're interested in that cover of the book. They're not really interested in the book. And Donald Trump appeals to that. He makes a good book cover. That's probably the analogy we've got to look at when you want to win an election. If it's all about winning an election, yes, you've got to have substance in the book. That is important. But that book cover, don't underplay the book cover. And that's where Donald Trump succeeds and where Biden doesn't succeed. Because Biden fumbles around. He looks like he's out of it. And that's when people are really paying attention. They're relying on their gut instincts. They're looking at this guy. I don't know about this guy. It's kind of like a job interview. He comes in. He doesn't know his stuff as well. And he fumbles around. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, not everybody watches the politics and watches the policy and tries to understand that and what is ideologically compatible with my viewpoint. I mean, all that is important. It is very important in the political process and deciding who you want to vote for. But for a lot of people, it's just that look, how they're dressed, the tie. You know, there's something about that guy I don't like. Trump understands that. And that's why he is, that's why I think he's successful in politics, given he doesn't really have a whole lot of practice in politics. That's why he does well. And on a debate stage, when we put the two side by side, you got to look at that. You got to put yourself in that mindset. Well, he's saying the right things on immigration. He's saying the right things on trade. Meanwhile, he's saying the right things on health care. He's saying the right things on defense. But it's really, well, why is Biden, like, playing with his eyebrow? Or why is Donald Trump, like, why is he scowling? You know, it's that stuff that matters when people look and they decide they're, you know, like, I'm going to go watch the debate tonight and I'm going to take this election seriously. And I am going to do my civic duty. I'm going to vote for the guy and I'm going to catch up on it. You can't really just catch up on it. And it is that situation where I think Democrats are a little worried about that. Particularly when, I keep saying this over and over again, 7 or 8 states will decide this presidential election. And most people have their minds made up right now. Those that don't have their minds made up in Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, what are they deciding? What are they waiting for? And it's not policy. It's those aesthetics. It's those little things. It's those intangibles that you don't really think about until this time of year, every 4 years. So that's why those debates are important. And Democrats were a little gun-shy about that. They're a little worried about that. They're a little worried about Joe Biden getting up there and having everything else right and one thing go wrong, like he forgot to zip up his zipper on his pants or something. It could be anything like that that blows it, and that's what they're worried about. And that's why you see some of these pundits, Tom Friedman, New York Times columnist, let's forego the debates. That is part of the motivation. The other motivation, as I said earlier, I think they don't like the idea of an unfiltered Donald Trump up there on the stage where they can't say, oh, this guy's wrong. Now, we will see one thing, I think, for the first time in the history of presidential debates, perhaps, from CNN. I'm making this bold prediction right now. I think they will interrupt the debates while Donald Trump is talking to have somebody say, he's wrong about that. Just mark my word. They'll do something like that, or they'll put it on the chyron, Donald Trump lies about coronavirus, or something like that. CNN will be the one to do it. It won't be MSNBC. Like, MSNBC is liberal. CNN is anti-Trump. If you want to know the distinction there. So, that's a little bit of a preview of presidential politics. We'll talk more about that, perhaps, as the show unfolds. You want to stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hold on, out of kindness, I suppose.
Take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Birmingham. Ooh, Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Want to hear from you, 251-343-0106. Text or call. Opening up the phone lines. Got a lot to talk about, but let's take a phone call real quick. Been waiting on hold. Tim from Robertsdale. Tim, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Just a quick question. I was kind of curious. You said the comment about the $600. Did you refer to it as $600 a month, or is it $600 a week, which would be $2,200 a month?
$600. Clarify. $600 a week, but could you live off of that, I guess, is the question.
So you're talking $2,200 a month tax-free with no, you know, no tax reduction. That's the amount you'll get. $2,200 a month.
Right.
Yeah, I could live off of that.
Well, and would that keep you from wanting to go to work? Is that disincentive for you to say, hey, I can take this money from the government and live a happy life, or want to make more money than just $600? That's the question.
If it's more than I'm making currently and it pays my bills and I don't have to take a chance in being around this virus, yeah, I would stay home and be happy with that amount. Temporarily, but you know what? What if you put the clause in that money that at the end of the year, if you do go back to work, or when you do go back to work, if the income tax, if it'll show up on your income tax, whether you want to take that money or not, and it'll slowly deduct that every year until you pay that back. That might be an incentive not to just ride the bill for free. Also, what do you think about that?
Well, sure. I mean, any approach like that, but the question is what could make it through Congress? We could talk about all these hypotheticals and all these ideas, and they're all perfectly honorable and valid ideas, but everybody's situation is it's just easier for Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and the White House to get in a room together and say, let's just give them $600 a week. Yeah, then that's a problem solved. We don't have to fight about it anymore. We can all go out to Bobby Mann's Steakhouse and have a good time. But it's getting to that. It's finding that common ground, and those types of things that are take a very nuanced approach. They're tougher. They're easier said than done.
Well, let me ask a question too. Would you rather? I suppose you're working. I know I'm working. I'm an essential worker, so I'm having to work. Would you rather be at home not working and taking care of yourself, or would you rather be working and being very precautious of what you're doing too and still getting paid?
Well, fair enough. Guess it's an individual's choice whether or not they want that or not. To me, I live in this bubble. I don't know if I could survive off of $600 a week.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you put up all the bills
already, if you're I'm going to use a hypothetical. If you're working at a restaurant, you're a bartender or you're a waitress or something, and then all of a sudden you start making that guaranteed versus hit or miss. I mean, why wouldn't you stay home?
Yeah,
but that's my opinion. I mean, I think it's an incentive to stay home. I would think that if they reduced it or made you pay it back, that would make more people want to go back to work sooner. And that would fix a little bit of this freeloading sound. A lot of people think it's freeloading by just staying at home and not working, getting it all for free. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Hey, thanks for the call, Tim. So somebody's got to pay for it. Either you got to print it, and if they print it, then what happens? It just becomes later on, it becomes a tax on everybody. It's a regressive tax with inflation, right? Or we'll tax the rich and give it to the poor. It's income redistribution. So that is the dilemma. Let's take another phone call. Let's hear from Tony from Daphne. Tony, what's on your mind?
Yeah, man, I was listening to what you were saying, and it's not just $600 per week, and it's not just, $2,200 a month. It's $600 plus the state maximum, which is another $275. So you're looking at $875 a week. That's like $21 an hour, a little over. So, yeah, nobody's going to want to go to work if they can sit home and make that kind of money.
Well, yeah, fair enough. The way it is being depicted, though, the way it is being presented to the public, so Tuberville United States Senate candidacy, that's way too much. And some others, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, some other Republicans say that's way too much.
It is.
whereas the left in this country is not enough. Now, let's also take this into account. In Alabama, $875 a week goes a long way. Does it go as far in Alabama as it does in New York? Does it go as far as in California, where cost of living is higher? But that's the problem with government. This is a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly, because I actually have a family member that was drawing that, and then they waited until it ended before they went and found a job. They did exactly that. They started their job on Monday. They got their last check last week. So, yes, it absolutely prevented people from going to work.
Yeah, well, and then we got to address that. To be honest with you, Tony, I can't see the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, extending that benefit.
I hope not.
It's just too much for the Republican caucus right now. It's going to be a hot button. The question is, can Democrats successfully use that against Republicans? And everything is political right now. Everything is looking at the presidential election. Will they say, look at these greedy Republicans not wanting you to have a measly $600 a week?
Yeah. The only ones they're going to touch base with is the millennials. Anybody who has worked for a living and worked in their life knows what the value of a dollar is. So if they touch this younger base and get them out, then that's the only way they're going to gain traction with it. But I don't think that they can use it. I don't think it's going to work for them.
Well, yeah, perhaps. Hey, Tony, thanks for the call. I appreciate
yes, sir.
It. Yeah. So I mean, that is the dispute right now. That's the fight. $600. The Democrats think they have a winning hand by saying $600. That's the pathway to getting back to normal. We'll see. Let's take a quick timeout. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. In the redneck Riviera, it's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the Flora family. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Let's talk about that $600 a week. What we find out, if you draw the max for the state of Alabama, $875 a week. Now, obviously, not everyone is drawing a max, but that keeping people from going to work? Is that disincentivizing work? We heard this from the mayor of Orange Beach that seasonal help that comes down, they're staying at home. A lot of these restaurants, bars, other attractions down there on the coast, at the beaches, they're unable to staff. So, there are real consequences to government policy. Yeah, we can shrug it off all we want, but $600, I don't know, just talking generally, is that enough to live off of for a lot of people? Let's take another phone call. Let's hear from Bill from Mobile. Bill, what's on your mind?
Good morning. So we're talking about the $600 a week, which is basically $31,000 a year. But that's just for one person, correct? If I'm not mistaken, it's not per household, it's per person. So you could technically have two people drawing that $600 a week, am I correct?
That's my understanding of it.
Okay, so now you're at $62,000, where if you compare it to somebody that's drawing Social Security. I'm not on Social Security, but somebody that's retired and getting Social Security, my understanding was minimum Social Security is $1,600 a month. And I just don't think it's fair that retired people that have worked their entire life get $1,600 a month and somebody staying home doing nothing draws more than that.
Well, and you're very well, you very well should feel that way, that you work all your life, put into a system, and then because of a pandemic, we take this approach that we're going to do a one-size-fits-all approach. But like I said, though, I think for a lot of people, it's the idea of a free money, right? And
sure.
Getting that free money, and the bad guys on the Republican side, they don't want you to have that free money because they're just greedy. They want to keep it for themselves.
Sure. But if you have two people staying at home making $1,200 a month, there's no way they're going to want to go to work.
Right. So that is that's the rub there. Do you appeal to people's good nature, or do you appeal to, hey, we're going to give you something away for free? The question is there, Bill. This is what we've seen throughout government, throughout history. We saw it with Obamacare. Once you give somebody something, it becomes very difficult to take it away. And this idea of guaranteed income. Yeah. Well, this idea of guaranteed income is so appealing to the Democratic Party.
Sure. And it sounds good to people that don't think about it.
Now,
but the money's got to come from somewhere.
There's consequences to that. Thanks for the call, Bill. There's consequences to that, because what happens, what would happen is, you know, how do you pay for it? Well, you take more debt, and that causes debt payments to go up. Economists will tell you it makes it more difficult to borrow money because it does stuff to interest rates. But also, if the goal is to, you know, what will probably happen is the Federal Reserve will just print more money. Then you're going to have, at some point, you're going to have inflation, and you're going to be paying more. And that is essentially a regressive tax. If you're paying more, everybody's got to pay more for gasoline. Everybody's got to pay for more for the commodities they use. You know, you think it's things that you're always going to need no matter what economics may be, like laundry detergent, paper towels, these things that are always, they're going to go up in price. And that is how this is paid for, that value of the dollar. Goes down, it plummets, and that's what we're facing here. It's going to happen eventually, but $600 way too the politics of it sound good. $600 sounds like a lot of money, but for me personally, I would still think that I need to get out and work. I think there's some people that think that as well, that is just not going to get it done. That's not going to quite pay the bills. Others, yeah, perhaps, but it's those jobs down at the bottom at the end that are going to suffer. Let's talk about something else here. Just switch gears. Something Sean Sullivan yesterday on his midday show talked a lot about it. The Mobile Airport. This has been brought up to me, and I spent a very early brief time in my life when I was a child living here in Mobile in Sims in the 1980s. And back then was when they were transitioning from Brookley Field out to Bates Field as the city's commercial airport. That is where you went to go fly places. Has anybody ever asked this question? Why did we do that in the first place? Why is the airport halfway to Mississippi? Was it the goal to become a regional airport and be part of like a service Mississippi? Was it to develop Airport Boulevard, which is my suspicion, to make that a major thoroughfare, and then, you know, you develop it, there's real estate, there's money to be made, it becomes a corridor for Mobile, and you could grow the city that way. Why do we do that in the first place? If you try to go from downtown to the airport out west Mobile, you better pack a lunch, because it's gonna be a little while. But it's fascinating that the push, it's been going on for the last 5-10 years, is to get back to Brookley Field and back downtown. What is going on there? And this the push to go out to West Mobile is at a time when, you know, now it's hip and fun to go downtown. Everybody wants to live downtown and be in walking distance of everything. Downtown revitalization is going on all around the country. And now the push is to bring that airport back to downtown. I just want to throw that out there. Let's work in one more phone call here about unemployment benefits. Wayne from Satsuma. Wayne, what's on your mind?
Hey, enjoying the show. Now, just a couple of comments about the $600 a week. You know, I find it amazing because you used the nomenclature a few minutes ago. And I don't know if it was your description of the Democrats or you actually feel that way, but a measly $600 a week. And I just wonder if anybody that's really trying to make that argument, if they've ever run a business and they've ever had, oh, I don't know, 2, 6, 8, 10 employees that are making $600 a week. Do you realize how much work you have to do, how much productivity has got to happen and able to pay people that kind of money? It's incredible. And one other point, you know, you stammered and stuttered a little while ago when the gentleman called in and made the comment about Social Security. That was perhaps the best call that I've heard, because now that's a legitimate concern. We talk about it like it's nothing, and we've got elderly people all over this country that are basically sitting at home trying to figure out if they're going to buy food or buy medicine because they're dependent on Social Security, and it's pitiful. They're getting, you know, $1,200-$1,400 a month, and then we turn around and we act like $600 a week is nothing.
Thanks for that moral soliloquy, Wayne. But let me address that real quick. When I said a measly $600, I was talking about that's the way it's being phrased by the Democrat, the opposition, the these guys, they're attacking Tommy Tuberville, are saying Tommy Tuberville doesn't want you to have a measly $600. So you can interpret that however you want. I don't care. And as far as me stammering and stuttering, it's just it's the idea of the Social Security that we don't talk about that. It's just trying to find the right words to say that. So read into it what you want, Wayne. But what I would say is $600 to a lot of people, particularly that look at government as something that's all-powerful and all-knowing, is a measly $600. Particularly in the big grand scheme of things, when you look at what they spend on a farm bill, or what they spend on defense, or what the government spends on anything else it does, a road and bridge project, that $600 to them, it just pales in comparison, right? So that is what I say, a measly $600. I'm not trying to demean your interpretation or what you think the value of $600 is. I am it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, just to clarify that. But they, and that is the Democrats that are in the state, they are the ones framing it as a measly $600, not really me. Anyway, so just glad to clear that up. Let's get back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier about the airport moving and why that ever happened. Let's hear from David on from Mobile. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jeff. Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, David.
Do you remember the Del Champ family and the Mitchell Company?
I do.
That is why the airport's out in West Mobile, because they owned all the land out there. If you're old Mobile money in this city, what you want is what you get.
I mean, the Del Champs, the grocery store chain, and the Mitchell Company. Mayor Mitchell, I know him from my South Alabama days, but that seemed to me that they wanted to develop Airport Boulevard, and that's why it is what it is today. Like, let's put the airport out there, and we will do this.
Boulevard was part of it, but they, like I said, they also owned all that land out there, too.
Yeah, well, and they profited off of it, but it's funny to me that now we're going back around. And I guess the question would be this: was there a benefit to that? Did it help lure in maybe the Coast Guard more, or was it that synergy there that you could, or could it be this, that we didn't want airplanes coming in and out of downtown? We like the idea out of sight, out of mind.
But let me ask you this question. How much more successful would tourism development projects like the String of Pearls, the Convention Center, the Maritime Museum, the cruise terminal, the tourist-centric events downtown have been had the passengers terminal stayed at Brooklyn?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I'm coming to Mobile, I'm not really thinking about where the airport is, because I don't know Mobile. I just assume the airport is nearby somewhere, and I'm like, well, you know, that airport, it's 30 miles or it's 30 minutes away from downtown. I think I'm probably going to go to Pensacola instead. Do people really think that way? I mean,
no, the reason the people that choose Pensacola or Mississippi or even New Orleans over Mobile is because of pricing. Like me, for example, next month I'm flying out of New Orleans because I can get a direct flight from New Orleans to Baltimore for a trip.
David, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about a tourist that's looking for a place to go. That's like, hey, I'm going to check out Mobile. It's the first Mardi Gras. I've heard that all, you know, and I'm going to go. Well, I was, but that airport, it's way too far out of town. I'm going to find something a little closer.
The pricing that keeps them out of the Mobile Regional Airport, those people out of the Mobile.
I mean, does moving the airport downtown change the pricing?
Chris Curry, who's extremely intelligent in this kind of stuff, thinks that it will, because it thinks it'll attract more airlines and more flights from the airlines and service Mobile, which will attract more passengers, which will spur competition.
Hey, David, thanks for the call. It's fascinating, the whole idea of these legacy carriers. What I've always heard is these legacy carriers were able to really curry favor with those in charge of Mobile, the Delta Airlines, United, American, these names you know, not the low-cost ones, not these LCCs, and they were able to keep the situation that benefited them, and they could charge a little bit more and keep the, remember when, was it AirTran came to Mobile, and what had happened was that was a low-cost carrier, and Delta just met them dollar for dollar. People were like, well, if I can fly Delta for wherever for $260 round trip, or I can fly AirTran, I'm going to go with Delta because I know Delta. And they've always been able to keep the low-cost carriers out of Mobile. Not so successful in other markets, but for some reason, Mobile has always been tough. And it's not so much that I don't know that the location of the airport is really what determines whether or not a low-cost carrier comes into Mobile. The airline like Frontier Airlines comes in, but they don't. You want to fly to Milwaukee, Milwaukee's a bad choice. You want to fly to somewhere like Tulsa, you're not going to be able to take Frontier Airlines. You're going to have to rely on these old hub and spoke carriers. It's a really, really weird system, the economics of commercial airfare and airlines in this country. Let's get a call in here real quick. Let's talk to Daniel. Daniel wants to talk about the airport stuff. Daniel, what's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I was just saying that, and for Fairhope, the main reason that I would go to Pensacola is it's faster to get there. You just take 110 and you're there. I-10 to 110, whereas Mobile, it's a lot longer.
Yeah, and that's the ill-conceived notion of putting the airport out there. It's just not a good way to get there. You could take the interstate down, I guess, toward Theodore and backtrack back north. But that commute, going down Airport Boulevard, red light, red light, red light, red light, it becomes a hassle. And for a guy like you at Fairhope, already got to go up 98 to hit 10. So just faster to go east to go to Pensacola.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Daniel. But I think that's always been a head scratcher to me. Like what was the decision making? And that I suspect it was economic. And there was obviously people are going to get rich off of it because of real estate, but I also think it had changed Mobile forever. Look at all the development. Look how much your life is different now if you live in Mobile and you go out Airport Boulevard to go shopping or whatever. Let's take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Make it to work. They're always late. Living by the drop in their news. Life in Dixie with these Alabama blues. Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song,
welcome back to the Chip Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you. 54 minutes after the hour. Let's work in another call here before we go to the top of the hour break. Let's hear from Shane. Shane from Mobile. Shane, what's on your mind?
It's James from Mobile. Sorry about that.
That's okay. James, go ahead.
You know, I listened to you. Yep, I think you're a great commentator and everything. To answer your question about airport, I'm 64 years old. Years ago, they didn't have a whole lot. But, you know, they started the hospitals. We had a lot of doctors that come in. We had doctors that come in that eventually moved. The airport was easy access by being out on West Mobile. Once it got there, it's just like people that worked in Coast Guard or Civil Service started living in the area. So they started developing area for both living. You know, there's even, trailer parks surrounding the Santa Williams area right there near the Coast Guard base. I believe that what they're trying to do now, and like you said, all the lights, they didn't have that many consecutive stopping lights on airport years ago. In fact, before they even started developing real good, I remember going down and you would have a light, but it would seem like 200 or 300 yards away. And it seems like they've kind of made them a little closer or brighter, one of the two. But I believe it has something to do with probably going to be with the cruise ship things. I think probably the Coast Guard's going to move back towards that area also. You know, they do a lot of training stuff. Well, you know, if you were to have an accident, it'd be better to have it over the ocean than have it in a populated area. like it is off of Airport Boulevard if one of your helicopters were to go down.
Hey, James, thanks for the call. Well, I guess in theory that works for me. The question what are you going to do with Batesfield? And I listened to a little bit of Sean's interview yesterday, his discussion about it. You may be making a private airport. You can do more with it. I kind of wonder this, though. Did the people who made that decision back in the day for Mobile, did they anticipate the city maybe would grow even more out that way, and that someday that airport wouldn't be as far out, that the bulk of the population would move away from the downtowns, it would move away from Midtown, and that you would look beyond the airport, maybe toward Mississippi, toward Hurley, Mississippi, and that would have grown even more than it has today, and people just kind of said no, and maybe that was in the back of their head, and it certainly worked though. Look at Airport Boulevard now compared to 30, 40 years ago. When I was a kid, I think it was in third grade, is when they put the first Walmart there at Schillinger Road at Airport Boulevard. And there was really not a whole lot else out there. But that airport was there, or it was going to be there. The timing's a little off in my head. But that was becoming the hot spot. It was West Mobile and more because you got to Cody Road and then it really dropped off and died off. But now it's developed. Schillinger Road is a major commercial thoroughfare now. So it worked. Let's just say that it worked. But it's fascinating to me that, well, now that we've tapped out that economic development, we're gonna go back to Brookley Field. Okay, and, you know. Was that the idea all along? Did those decision makers back then, did they not say, you know, this could have implications? This could make it much more difficult for people to come in and out of Mobile, and then maybe they just didn't anticipate that, but they had to if they thought it was going to grow. So those are the questions I have. We're going to take a time out. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
West Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.